Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast.
Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts, Amelia.
And Beth.
And how are you this week, Beth?
I am just fabulous, Amelia. How are you?
That is great to hear. I am also fabulous.
See, it's just a fabulous sort of day. We're fabulous in February.
Fabulous in February. I love it.
Yeah. Can't ask for much more than that, right?
No.
In fact, it makes me want to take a vacation. And you know what I need when I go on a vacation?
What?
A hotel.
An inn, perhaps?
I do love a good inn.
Great. Well, wouldn't you know it, Beth? That's what we're talking about this week. Haunted inns. Only they're not haunted inns for a vacation. They're haunted inns right here in Massachusetts.
I can go on a near to me vacation, right?
A staycation?
Well, I think a staycation is when you stay at home. You just don't go anywhere for vacation. But I think you can do like a nearby vacation, not a day trip, but like a getaway. Is that what it is? Is it a getaway?
That would be a weekend getaway.
Yeah. And I think that this week we have some really fun inns here in Massachusetts if you want to do a vacation or a getaway to go and check out.
There you go.
I have three stories this week.
That's wonderful.
So should I start?
You should start.
Okay. So the first one I want to talk about this week is the Red Lion Inn. Now, I probably know like 10% of what's actually going on with the Red Lion Inn, but I'm going to tell you about the 10% that I know.
What are you talking about?
The Red Lion Inn.
What do you mean 10%?
Well, I'm sure that there's a lot more stuff that goes on there that I'm not aware of because there seemed to be a lot of stuff to look at.
Oh, okay.
So I wanted to start with that because I thought that this would be a fun one. So the Red Lion Inn is in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, not to be confused with Sturbridge, Massachusetts, where we have Old Sturbridge Village. And I haven't been there since I was a kid, and I keep thinking I should go back. But no, out in Stockbridge, which I think borders on New York, doesn't it?
It's way out there, yeah.
Yeah. So it's way out in the Berkshires. It's on the other side of the little mountains that we have here in Massachusetts. And so there's actually kind of a funny story about how the Red Lion Inn was discovered as a haunted hotel or a haunted inn. In 2005, when the internet was, you know, really taking off and things like TripAdvisor were becoming a thing, there was a TripAdvisor review that popped up about this little tiny no-name inn out in Stockbridge, not Sturbridge, Stockbridge. And it was talking about how it was haunted. And people kind of got a little excited about that. And then the buzz kind of died down a little. And then a year later, another review went up on TripAdvisor by someone else who reported that they were kept up all night by somebody tugging at the sheets on their bed, pulling at their toes, doing all sorts of strange things. And then a month later, we get another TripAdvisor review talking about it. Someone else who went and was there and was staying in room 301 for those three reviews that were on TripAdvisor. So there's definitely something in room 301 that, you know, kind of plays with people's feet while they're sleeping. And as someone that really dislikes you touching my feet, please don't. That just everything about that is just kind of scary. So typically when people do see anything in room 301, what they tend to see is an older man with a top hat pulling at their toes and the sheets on their bed. And so it's just kind of, you know, creepy. Maybe he wants a little bit of attention. But so some of the other things that have happened in room 301 is that there was a team of ghost hunters from Long Island, not the Long Island people that we've talked with in the past, but a different couple that went out. And they stayed in room 301 and they did their full ghost hunting routine. And they were able to locate a persistent cold spot on the floor right next to the bed. There was an armoire on the floor right next to that spot that there was knocking coming through throughout the course of the night. And one of the other things that they got, which I was really trying to find video of, I couldn't find the video myself, but they claim to have caught video of something making like a sweeping motion as it came across the floor and it bangs into the camera and the tripod that it's on. So you see the camera get disturbed by something. But all I could get was a description. I couldn't actually see the video anywhere. So if anybody out there can find that video, please send it to us. Some other guest encounters have included the famous James Van Praagh, the clairvoyant and psychic medium, stayed there. And he actually called down to the front room, the front desk in the middle of the night, and asked if he could please be moved. There were too many spirits in the room that he was staying in, and he could not get any rest. And then I have one other cute story about a guest staying there. So this is a woman who was staying in room 424, and she woke up in the middle of the night, you know, out of a dead sleep, woke up and had that, you know, stranger looming over her feeling where she couldn't speak, she couldn't move. And then suddenly the feeling passed. And she woke her husband up and was like, "Did you feel that?" And he's like, "No, I don't know what you're talking to. I'm going back to sleep." And she was very disturbed by it. It was 1:35 in the morning.
She had sleep paralysis?
She had some sort of little sleep paralysis issue where she just woke up and just, I got the sense from reading it, it was a very brief time that she woke up and just had that horrifying feeling and couldn't move at first. And then once she was able to move, it was only a couple of moments, but it was 1:35 in the morning. Well, they go down to breakfast the next morning and there's a message for them at the front desk. Apparently their daughter had called. There had been a big storm. There was all sorts of a mess. There's weather damage. And that, you know, they were calling because they needed her to come home. Well, isn't the time on the message 1:35 in the morning? I just wonder if actually maybe the phone like binged or something to wake her up in the room. And she was just too deep asleep. You know how sometimes right when you fall asleep, you fall into that nice deep sleep. And I know that if Sean wakes me up and I'm at that stage, he says that I make a face like this. I have no idea what's happening. And I am just terrified.
Cool.
You have to describe that face to people.
It's Beth with her eyes really wide and her mouth really big. It's like very shocked.
Very shocked. Absolutely terrified. I have no idea what's happening. Sean says it's actually really funny because it happens for 3 or 4 seconds and then I completely go back to sleep. I never have any recollection of it.
Cool.
Side note, Bobby does the exact same thing.
Oh, nice.
He is 100% my child. So I also thought that it would just be kind of fun to, I wasn't able to find that original TripAdvisor review. TripAdvisor was not helping me out tonight. It was just freezing up on me. But I did find the second haunted review from August 2005. So this is what it says. It's titled Haunted Hotel? I only wish I read TripAdvisor before checking into the Red Lion Inn. In August of 2005, I was staying there on a business trip. By chance, out of 21 people in our group, I was given room 301. A room that another patron had written about on the same site almost a year ago to the day prior. In the middle of the night, on three different occasions, I woke up feeling my toes tugged on and someone scratching my hand. I also felt as if someone or something was under the covers with me at one point. Then, at 9 a.m. in the morning, I woke up when I heard the maid knocking at the door. She opened the room with the key, walked in, and headed for the bathroom. I heard the footsteps come out of the bathroom and stop by the bed. And then suddenly it felt as though someone was fluffing up the comforter, as if trying to make up the bed on the left-hand side. As hard as I tried, I could not move and I could not speak. When I looked up, I realized I was in the room alone. No one had been there. There is much more to this story, but it is too much detail to write all in here. Let's just say it was one of the most unusual and scary experiences of my life. When I got home, I did some research on the Red Lion Inn, and I discovered that on August 31st, 1896, the property was destroyed in a fire. My visit was in August of 2005. The other patron who wrote a similar review on this site dated it August of 2004, and they were also checked into the room 301. If you ask me, that's more than just a coincidence. I pulled a couple other fun reviews about spooky happenings there, but I feel like the story has gone on long enough.
Does anyone know who it might be?
I wasn't able to find anything about who's haunting the hotel, why they think it might be haunted. You know, this was just a hotel with some neat stories about some ghostly happenings that took place. a little different than our usual ones. I didn't get to give the history of Greek and Rome, and I usually like to go back and give a lot of history, but no, there's no real identified cause of these disturbances.
Weird.
Very.
So my next story is the Concord Colonial Inn in Concord, Massachusetts. So the Concord Colonial Inn was built in Concord, Massachusetts, way, way back from before the Revolutionary War even began. It's located just a half mile away from the famous North Bridge. The bridge is famous because that's where the shot heard round the world took place and the Revolutionary War started in 1775. So dating back to 1716, this enduring landmark has been operating as a hotel since 1889. The inn is broken up into three distinct sections. The rightmost section was built in 1716 by Colonel James Minot. Is it Minot or Minot?
M-I-N-O-T?
Yeah.
Minot.
Minot, grandfather of cabinet maker Amy White. Amy White, spelled A-M-M-I, was known for being involved in a controversy in 1775 when he attacked and wounded a British soldier at Old North Bridge with an axe. Some say he crushed the skull of the soldier, while others say he scalped the soldier and cut off both of his ears. The Whites sold the house in 1799 to John Thoreau, grandfather of the very famous Henry David Thoreau. John Thoreau died in 1801 at age 46, but the property remained the home of his son, John, and his wife, Cynthia Dunbar, who were Thoreau's parents. Henry actually stayed there with his aunts between 1835 and 1837 while he was studying at Harvard University. It became known as the Thoreau House in 1889, when this and the middle building were purchased at auction by John Maynard Keyes and used as a boarding house and a small hotel. Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis actually used to rent rooms at the inn when she was there to visit her daughter Caroline while she was studying at the Concord Academy. So for those not from the area, Concord's a really, really nice town here in Massachusetts. A lot of really old money there. Current day room 24 in the inn was previously used as an operations room for wounded soldiers back in the 1770s. During the Revolutionary War era, the hotel was actually owned by a doctor. Caretakers operated on injured soldiers in the room, but due to the severity of their wounds and the fact that they got the wounds at a time when medicine wasn't great, many succumbed to their injuries and were then taken to what is now room 27, but at that time was the morgue, which is creepy. The Boston Globe reported that on June 14, 1966, Judith Fenlins of Highland Falls, New York, visited the Colonial Inn on her honeymoon and stayed in room 24 on the second floor. That night, she claimed to have seen a grayish apparition on her bedside, and that is the first documented report of a haunting in the hotel. Staff and guests both reported flickering lights, waking up with the lights and TV turned on, orbs floating next to them, and hearing haunting voices. Many report seeing an older woman roaming the halls that is believed to be a middle-aged nurse named Rosemary. Despite the amount of soldiers who died in the inn, most often the people who were there were actually the caretakers are still wandering the halls. And the inn has really owned up to their kind of legacy as being a haunted place. They even have a whole section on their website dedicated to it. And I just so happened to be talking to Barry Corbett earlier today, and I was like, Barry, we're doing this thing on haunted inns. Have you ever stayed at the Concord Colonial? And he said, yes, he has. And that he didn't get anything in that room, but they have lots of restaurants there. And he said that they got a faint EVP down the hall near the restaurant. So maybe when he joins us next week, he'll bring it in for us.
That'll be very exciting.
Yes. And that is the Concord Colonial Inn in Concord, Massachusetts.
Ooh, very fun. And it's close to us. This week's topic is haunted inns in Massachusetts. So stick with me because I'm going to talk about the Crowne Plaza Hotel in Pittsfield. And while it might not on the surface seem to fit into being an inn, I do want to explain to you why it counts as a haunted inn. Okay. So the Crowne Plaza in Pittsfield has actually been the site of a hotel since 1823. That's 199 years. Over those years, it has been five different hotels. So in 1823, it was built as the Exchange Hotel, and it stayed the Exchange Hotel until the owner of it sold it to his son, and his son changed it to the United States Hotel. I thought that was just such an interesting name for a hotel. Like, we call stuff American this, or, you know, like we have American Airlines. We don't have like United States Airlines.
We have United.
We have United Airlines. Yes. I suppose that would count, but I don't know. It just seems so strange to me that it was called United States Hotel.
Well, what year was it?
That happened in the early 1860s.
Maybe that's what people were calling it more back then.
Maybe people were trying to be more United States inclusive as we tried to avoid this Civil War thing that was on the horizon.
Yeah.
So there we are, 1862, and we are at the U.S. Hotel, the United States Hotel. And it hasn't been up and running very long when something really atrocious happened. So there was a woman working there. Her name was Jane Collins. She worked as a maid, and she was really involved in this very nasty marriage. It turns out she tried to escape the marriage by moving into the hotel where she worked, thinking that that would shield her from the rage of her abusive husband. Big surprise, it did not. And he had a pretty good idea where she had gone. He shows up, I think it was one morning in October in 1862, and he finds her in the kitchen in the hotel, and he levels his bayonet-loaded musket, and he stabbed her to death in the kitchen with his bayonet. That was sort of traumatic, right? There was a whole trial afterwards, and that's when it came out that he was a really terrible person. He had been awful to his wife, and that she was trying to leave him, and that's why he killed her. So that happened, right? And believe it or not, a lot of people didn't really want to stay at the United States Hotel after that had happened. It just kind of gave people a bad taste in their mouth. So it went out of business, and it sat empty for a long time after that. It took about 30 years before anybody was interested in it. And the next people that were interested in it tore down what had been on the property before, and they built this big, massive Hotel Wendell. So this is the third major structure there. So the Hotel Wendell was actually a really grand sort of structure. It had about 300 rooms. I believe before he was president, John Kennedy stayed there a few times. He never stayed there while he was president, but he did stay as a senator. And so it had, you know, important people who would come by. So different, you know, people have come and gone. And then the Hotel Wendell also saw a sad decline. And the Hotel Wendell was sold to the Sheraton Company, who eventually tore down the old Hotel Wendell. And in their place, they built a giant Hilton. The Hilton then sold out to the Crowne Plaza Pittsfield, which is now host to some ghosts all through the hotel. So they produce cold spots. There are voices that come from nowhere. There are shadow figures that move about. Usually in hauntings, you know how we'll usually find an entity, it likes to stay like in one room, right? And like you may occasionally see it in other rooms, but like that's primarily the place it hangs out. You know, everybody kind of stakes out their spot in the afterlife and that's it. Well, that's not what happens with the ghosts at the Crowne Plaza in Pittsfield. They go everywhere. They're in the main building. They're in the parking areas. They're in the parking garage. They're in bedrooms. They're in hallways. They're in dining rooms. They're in kitchens. They just move everywhere and they are seen everywhere. So the most common to be spotted is an apparition, just big floating lady in white, and it's believed to be Jane Collins. And the reason that people think that there's all this spiritual activity now is actually when they tore down the old Hotel Wendell, the ghosts supposedly were there and they were happy there. And it just disturbed them that their place had been torn down and rebuilt into this giant, terrible building. If you look at the Crowne Plaza, it doesn't have any of the charm. You know, it looks very modern, very, you know, needs to be stuck right in the middle of a city. It doesn't look like it belongs out in the Berkshires. Oh, and this other interesting little piece. So in 2014, the Crowne Plaza's marketing director claimed that the hotel actually has photos with the ghost. I feel like this is my week for people were making claims about stuff they had and I couldn't find it. Anyway, that's the Crown Plaza. And I believe that you can get a room in the Crown Plaza for about $300 a night.
Cool. Good story. So my next story is somewhere Beth and I, we've actually been together.
It was our very first ghost hunting trip together.
On to the story of the Longfellow's Wayside Inn. Longfellow Wayside Inn of Sudbury, Massachusetts has been a working inn for over 300 years. So as you can imagine, it's haunted. Actually, it's largely considered to not only be the oldest working inn in the entire United States, but it is said to be one of the most haunted inns in all of New England. Maybe the entire United States, but I don't know, because this show only focuses on New England for the most part. Not because of the amount of spirits that haunt its rooms, but because of one very, very, very active spirit that resides in room 9. The inn started as a modest two-family residence back in 1707 and officially became a working inn in 1716. Originally, it was called the Howe's Tavern. This quaint inn was made famous when Henry Wadsworth Longfellow employed it as the setting for his book of poetry, Tales of the Wayside Inn, in 1863. Henry Ford, the billionaire founder of the Ford Motor Company and long admirer of Longfellow's work, purchased the property in 1923 and restored the inn and the over 100 acres of land it sits on to its former glory. His goal was to turn the property into a living history museum and to save it from any kind of modern development. He added to the property a grist mill, an old red schoolhouse, a chapel, and some other spots. Despite all the renovations, Room 9 is still pretty haunted to this day by Jerusha Howe. So your original inn got its name Howe Tavern because it was built by the Howe family, who handed the property down through four generations. The Howe's innkeeping legacy ended with Lyman Howe, Jerusha's brother, since he never married or produced an heir by the time of his death in 1861. Jerusha was known as the Belle of Sudbury, and her musical and artistic skills were renowned. She famously owned the first piano ever brought into town and was known to play it for visitors in the night. So the story goes that she was engaged to an Englishman, and he sailed home to England to make arrangements for the wedding. However, once he left, he never came back. It's not known if he abandoned her or if he drowned at sea or who knows, because this was in the 1700s. There weren't cell phones. There weren't land phones. There wasn't anything. Anything could have happened to him and she wouldn't have known, which is scary and awful to think about. She lived out her days at the inn by her brother's side, helping him run the business before she died at the very young age of 45. Way back in 1842 of a broken heart. But it is said she never actually left. Some guests say in room 9 and also in room 10, you can smell Jerusha's citrus perfume or feel her sweep past them on the stairs. There have even been claims of people being awakened by her touch or seeing her presence at the foot of the bed. People also say they can hear her playing the piano while they're in the room. Room 9 is also home to this fun thing, and it's called the Secret Drawer Society. Do you remember this, Beth? Once I explain to you, you will remember. So the Secret Drawer Society is the name given to the visitors who stay there and leave notes. People write little notes all over the room, and they put it like you write like, oh, we're here for our anniversary, didn't see Jerusha. People usually write it related to the ghost encounter. And they stuck it into little cracks, crevices, drawers, everywhere throughout the room. So you just like, it's old, from 1700s. So you can like reach up and touch the ceiling when you're there and actually be pulling these notes out. And some of them go back decades. This is a tradition. And Beth and I can tell you firsthand, we've been in this room, we've investigated the Wayside Inn, and it's true. They're everywhere. So we went with Boston Paranormal Investigators way back in early 2019. And we left a little early because It's like one room that's really haunted. It was very limited space. There was a lot going on at the hotel. So we kind of dipped out after dinner, and they have a great dinner there. They really do. I had some nice couscous. After we left, some of the people at BPI, they got video of the door handle in their room turning by itself. And I believe they got it from both sides of the door. So that's very interesting. They told me, I talked to Barry earlier today, he said they went back recently, but unfortunately there were two birthday parties going on in the hotel, so they couldn't get like EVPs or anything real. But it is haunted and it's still working in today. You can go. I saw on Facebook, you know, like your Facebook friends with people you're not really actually friends with. A girl I'm Facebook friends with, she's getting married there next fall. And I was almost like, oh my God, it's so haunted. But I was like, no, don't ruin her day. I don't think she'd like appreciate getting married in a haunted inn. I totally recommend people go there and have a good time and read the notes, if nothing else. It's cool. And it's a good, like happy ghost haunted spot. If you're like, oh, I'm new to ghost hunting, I want to like get some evidence of a ghost, but I don't want like something bad to happen. It's like a good first spot, if that makes sense.
It does make sense.
Yeah.
You got to try to be careful about which night you go because it is very loud there. The sound in the place travels a lot. If there is something going on in the inn, it's really hard to find anywhere quiet. So we went there. There was a wedding the night that we were there. And if Barry said there were two birthday parties, I can't even imagine how loud it was.
Yeah.
Well, the Wayside Inn is very expensive to stay in. It's like $300 or $400 a night. And if you want to stay in room 9, you have to book it like far in advance. Because yeah, everybody wants to stay there. All right. So my last one tonight is about the Beechwood Inn in Barnstable. So Amelia and I will often go back and forth about, you know, have we done a story on this one before? Or because there are so many of them now that, and we usually get 3 or 4 of them in each episode. So we seem to have a lot of stories out there. Anyway, so I think, Amelia, the one that you did was actually the Barnstable House. And you had told us a really great story about that one day. And so that Barnstable House has a property pretty much right across the street from it called the Barnstable Inn. Very creative in the naming conventions with these guys. And so the Beechwood Inn is the home to the mysterious lady. Okay. So it's funny that earlier with the Red Lion Inn, you had asked, you know, well, do people know like where the ghost came from or who it might be? Well, on that one, no. But on this one, it's actually a very, I think that it's a funny story. It's a little tragic, but the Barnstable House that you had reported on had a fire in 1975. And as the firefighters came rushing up to Barnstable House to put the fire out, they could see a woman standing up in the third floor window. Mm-hmm. And she floated out the window and across the street. And apparently landed on the Beechwood Inn. So she landed there and just decided, this is a pretty nice house. I'm going to hang out here. And nice. So there was really no history of a haunting prior to the 1970s when that happened. And the story is that that was witnessed by all the firefighters there and a bunch of townspeople who came out to see a fire at night because what else is going on, right? The ghosts, and there are several ghosts actually at the Beechwood Inn in Barnstable. They like to do a lot of like kind of mischievous things. They like to unscrew light bulbs on you, right? It worked a minute ago. Now all of a sudden it's loose. One of their favorite things to do is to bolt doors from the inside so that Mr. Traggett, who lives there now, he has to climb in through the window and unbolt the doors from the inside. The mysterious lady does like Mrs. Trent. I'm sure I'm saying their names wrong, but Traggett, and will speak to Mrs. Traggett. And that was very upsetting to Mrs. Traggett at first. Apparently, the very first time it happened, she walked into a room, saw the mysterious woman standing there. She's like an older woman. She's about 70-ish. She's got long gray hair, and she appears as a full body apparition. And so with impeccable manners, the apparition turns to Mrs. Traggett and says, good morning, before fading into nothingness.
Wow.
Very polite, right? She also likes to play a little version of hide and seek with Mr. Traggett that she will appear. So this is a bed and breakfast that they're running. And so she will appear to be a customer in the like front hall of the bed and breakfast, and he'll come running inside thinking, you know, she needs some information, and she disappears. And she'll do it to him a couple of times, you know, in kind of like the course of, you know, a day, and just kind of playful, right? She also really enjoys music, and she has been known to produce music from rooms without radios, without any sort of music player, without any instruments or anything. Just Mrs. Traggott will be walking along and will suddenly hear music from nowhere.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's, you know, kind of neat. Like I said, it was a private home from the time it was built in 1853 until 1980. It was sold, and the owners that they sold it to reported that there was a male ghost figure in the home when they sold it over to the Traggotts, and they called their male ghost Arthur. They just thought that was a good name for him. So both Arthur and the mysterious lady have been seen by guests in the home. Arthur, he likes to hang out in the marble suite, right, which is one of the rooms there. And he likes to come over and touch people's faces very gently while they're laying in bed and sleeping.
Ooh, creepy.
Very creepy. Very creepy. No, thank you. Absolutely no, thank you. But I didn't catch how much it was to stay at this particular place. I'm not sure if you can stay there right now. It was for sale in 2017, and I hadn't got caught up on the ownership status of it. But seems kind of neat. You know, Barnstable's not too far from here. It's right down on the Cape. If you're familiar with like Hyannis, you know, Hyannis is actually part of Barnstable. Mid-Cape, easy for a vacation. Lots of other places to stay if you decide that the haunted inn in Barnstable is not your place. So that's all for my stories this week.
Cool.
They were short. They were sweet.
Well, now people in the area have a lot of good spots for haunted inns they could stay at.
Absolutely.
You got anything else this week, Beth?
We have something very exciting happening this season. I just became aware of this afternoon.
What's that?
Well, Amelia says we talked about this, but I don't think we did. And see, the thing is, Amelia sometimes has conversations in her head that she doesn't share with me. So this could have been one of them for all we know. Some of you may notice that this is what, our 93rd episode, Amelia?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
93rd. Which means this season we're going to have 100 episodes.
I thought it might be cool. We've been talking about, and maybe we should finally do it, having a community ghost hunt.
I think that would be fun. I thought
we'll plan it out for the summer. Well, that's very exciting, Beth. Cheers to 100 episodes in a few more episodes.
Yeah, in like 2 months, but it's coming. This is very exciting, folks. Thanks for sticking with us for so long.
It's very exciting. It's been a lot of episodes.
It has been a lot of episodes.
I think it's great. We've come so far. So far from our first couple of episodes, and here we are 2 years and almost 100 episodes later.
Right. Remember when we did Ghosts 3 years. In the News?
Almost 3 years.
Hey guys, go back and listen to Ghosts in the News. That was actually a pretty good idea for a show.
Ghosts in the News and Ghosts in the News 2 are our two least listened to episodes.
I know. Please go listen to them. Amelia's dying for more listens, and you might not have listened to those ones. We talk about ghost stories that they had
go back
in the
and
news.
Listen to those. No, it was a good idea. It was a really fun idea for an episode. We did it twice, and it's not what the people wanted. The people did not want Ghosts in the News. I don't know why. I thought they were great.
I thought they were really good too. People like to hear the ghost stories about haunted inns, but it was like news clips that talked about ghost stories, and we talked about why they may or may not be ghosts.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a guy hiding in somebody's closet at one point too?
I don't know.
I seem to remember. Or maybe we decided that would be one.
There was someone hiding in the walls of one of the houses.
I think we had some other, good, like early on ideas. I had to scroll back through like season one as I was looking for, did we do this one? Did we do this one? Like, oh, Ghosts in the News. We were still over at the Somerville Media Center for that with all our old friends over there. Do we have reviews?
Nope, we don't have any new reviews this week.
Oh, okay. Hey, folks, send us reviews. I had to read a TripAdvisor review this week, so we had a review on here. I could read another one. Hang on, wait, let me read another one.
No, that's okay. Well, everyone, go stay at the Red Lion Inn, room 301, and write into the show. Tell us what happened to you.
Yeah. Don't write into TripAdvisor. Write into us. We're your new TripAdvisor.
We'll tell you where to go.
Absolutely. We've been lots of places.
Anything else?
No mail, no nothing.
No, we have nothing.
People. I don't often ask for things, but could you please tweet at Stephen King and ask him to be on our show? That would be great. Appreciate that. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you guys. And as always, you can find us online at ghosthuntinginnewengland.com, facebook.com/ghosthuntinginnewengland, on Twitter, ghosthuntingne. Send us a note at ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com or carrier pigeon to Pancake's house. And as always,
happy hunting.